इतिहास द इंडियन हिस्ट्री पॉडकास्ट।
हाय एंड वेलकम बैक टू इतिहास 2.0। दिस पॉडकास्ट लुक्स एट कंटेम्प्ररी इंडियन हिस्ट्री। इट ट्रीट्स हिस्ट्री विद अ ट्विस्ट। सो वी स्टार्टेड दिस ब्रांड न्यू सीजन ऑन इतिहास पॉडकास्ट दैट टॉक्स अबाउट एवोल्यूशन ऑफ मीडिया इन जनरल, एंड दिस एपिसोड विल टॉक अबाउट एवोल्यूशन ऑफ फिल्म्स इन पर्टिकुलर। Now, film or cinema is something that most of the Indians are passionate about. That is almost like a second religion to most of us. So, in this particular season, we are going to look at multiple facets of evolution of cinema. And to talk about one such facet, today I am joined by Professor Ajit Dwara. Professor Ajit Dwara is a very well-known film critic and, of course, a professor of films. So, Ajit sir, welcome to this podcast. It's really a privilege to have you here.
Thank you for calling me.
We always say that films depict the reality around us, and as reality changes, as the society goes through a lot of changes, the polity, the economy, the culture around us change, cinema also reflects a part of it. So I today want to trace the evolution of cinema, where cinema used to depict a very traditional or a rural or a suburban kind of society in the 50s, let's say, in the post-independence India. Till today, what kind of society cinema has started showing? So I want to trace that evolution with you. What do you have to say about it?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, cinema is the documentation. And what it's done, both the fiction and the non-fiction cinema, documentaries, short films, feature films, even home movies to some extent, they document history in the sense they're photographic record of a film record of history. And this has been the case right from the very beginning. I mean, and so if you look at the first silent film, Raja Harishchandra by Dada Saab Phalke, what do you notice? You notice that what's the first Indian film? It's mythological. It reflects some part of that nature, that the country that has adopted cinema. With the subject being mythology, it also uses Indian folk traditions, Indian folk dance, and of course this was silent film, so no music till that point. It uniquely, like all the other countries, Soviet cinema reflects communist ideology, Marxist ideology, German cinema in the beginning expressed German expressionist angst and worries and so on and so forth. American film was always very fast because, right, you know, it's a capitalist society and you need to generate revenue and so on and so forth. So the characteristic of American cinema is fast. So I mentioned Raja Harishchandra, but you go through all the silent films. And then with the coming of sound, of course, we had music. And Indian cinema became largely, not all of it, became musicals. So yes, I mean, it documents a lot of traditions, it documents culture, and it documents history. And as you mentioned, in the 1950s, in the Nehruvian era, you had films by Raj Kapoor, Shri 420, Awara, that reflected Nehruvian socialist ideas.
Right.
In black and white with music, you know, both in terms of urban landscapes and rural landscapes, you know.
So for example, a film like, say, Do Bigha Jameen, where Balraj Sahani has played a fantastic role, that essentially is a struggle of somebody who's trying, who's trying to save his farmland. And then he comes to the city and then he has to undergo another struggle. So we have films from the 50s, like you mentioned, maybe Bimal Roy film, where the landscape was predominantly rural.
You know, most of India lived in the villages at that time. So because cinema was so revenue-based and it made so much money as soon as it started, you know, cinema theaters were built, exhibitors came into existence, the whole structure came into place. The economic structure of cinema came into place. By the 1950s, there were the studio systems, still the studio systems at that time, Mehboob Studio and many other studios like that, Navketan, Mehboob, all these studios which paid salaries. So it was an industry by that time. I mean, cinema was an industry, and the industry being economic understood that most of India lived in the villages. So the stories would have to be rural based. But as India began to change, and this is how cinema affects, how cinema actually reflects changing social dynamics, economic dynamics, as India started to become more urban, and there was urban migration from rural areas because of poverty, because of a lack of land reforms. Essentially, because of lack of land reforms, the caste system, the oppressive caste system, and many other reasons, migration took place to the cities. And as migration took place to the cities, the films gradually started having urban landscapes and urban stories. But at that time, it was still urban and rural, both. I mean, you take Mother India. I mean, it is essentially about right. land. I mean, it deals with other issues, but it's essentially about land. Time went on. Then you had the Chetanand films and so on. It was a mix. And there was a slight foreign influence also, because, you know, a lot of Hollywood films also started making an impact on the makers of cinema. So they would like to have, at that time, the rom-coms of those days began. And for that, you needed, you know, maybe a boy who lives in a village, or a girl who's from a village, and a boy who's from a city. That kind of dynamic started taking place. But as time went on, and in the 90s, I mean, dramatic changes took place. Dilwale, the movie Dilwale, which you have seen, DDG, what is the acronym?
It's DDLJ, sir. Dilwale
Dulhania Le Jayenge. DDLJ. That's the acronym, yeah. So a film like that really reflects how, you know, what is the film about? It's shot largely in Europe and in India as well. And so the couple meet in Europe and they come back to India. She's from England, from Britain. She's from that Indian diaspora culture. So there was a recognition that this diaspora culture of Indians living in abroad in the United States, Canada, Australia, England, and so on, where great revenue, the revenue from there, from foreign sales and from sales made before the production of the film, in fact, you know, the foreign revenue when it was translated from pounds or dollars to Indian rupees was great. And so then that revenue example was applied to cinema. And so then, you know, a lot of films were shot abroad. There were other reasons also for films being shot abroad. And that one was that Kashmir was shut down in the 90s.
I think, sir, I'm going to bring you to that point slightly later, because first I want to understand how things moved from 50s or 60s to 70s and 80s when you see two trends, you know. So there is a popular cinema that that has largely slowly shifted to urban settings. Although it's out and out commercial. So what you see is totally, you know, a make-believe sort of depiction of the city. And secondly, there's also a parallel film movement going on in the same era, where you see depiction of society in a completely different manner. So both still are based in a city, but they show things very differently.
You know, you're absolutely right. The only difference between parallel cinema and commercial cinema is that one was at that time financed by FFC, Film Finance Corporation, NFDC. And so the revenue generation was not so much of a priority. Whereas with commercial film, it was. Right. But you're absolutely right in that sense. If you look at the parallel cinema, Ankur, you take Ankur, which was a breakthrough film at that point by Shyam Benegal, Ankur and Manthan. You see Manthan about milk cooperatives, Ankur about the caste system and the rural areas of Hyderabad, Andhra Pradesh. Then you look at Saeed Mirza's films which were much more urban based, basically looking at Bombay city, at that time Bombay city, and basically a lot of slum locations, you know, a lot of slum locations. The struggles of a city which was so crowded, where there was no place to live. I mean, those are the themes of Saeed Mirza. So that cinema also had its divide between city-based subjects and rural subjects. That cinema also had its divide. But, you know, the increasing urbanization, I mean, if you look at Bengali cinema, it's the same thing. You know, it started off rurally. I mean, if you look at great films, Pather Panchali and the whole entire Apu trilogy. There were the rural areas of Bengal, but you know, then you looked at films that took place that were made later, then they became more and more urban and dealt with the middle class. The most important thing is that the creation of an Indian middle class. And in the 50s, the Indian middle class was minuscule. And therefore, the Indian middle class, with all its concerns, you know, minuscule. But it was a huge middle class by the time liberalization took place, and post-liberalization, a huge middle class. And the huge middle class had aspirations.
Right.
You know, they would aspire to go abroad. They would aspire to buy a new car. They would aspire to, you know, to travel across India and in good fashion, stay in good hotels and so on and so forth.
This middle class, sir, that you're talking of, was it slowly getting created through the 70s where, and also early 80s, where you have films from Hrishikesh Mukherjee or Basu Chatterjee, which were not exactly parallel films, but which were not out and out commercial also. So typically, I'm talking about the movies where Amol Palekar would be a hero. You know, he represented a different kind of class in those movies.
But that class, if you look at it, was, you know, if you look at it, was a slightly intellectual class. You know, it was not the commercial middle class, not acquisitional middle class. It was basically either university professors or teachers or people of that class who liked to discuss poetry and would discuss many other subjects amongst themselves.
I am going to bring you to that point which you mentioned slightly before, sir, where locations of Hindi films, the shooting locations, I mean, they drastically changed, and they directly moved from Kashmir, possibly, especially for a romantic song setup. They directly moved from Kashmir to Europe. What do we trace that with? Why did that happen?
Well, there are a couple of reasons. And the obvious reason is that of Kashmir and location and a good location. The second is, of course, the expatriate Indian, the diaspora Indian, who like to identify with European settings because or American settings because he or she lives there and lives in that society. And the other thing, which is very true, and I've been told this, is that it was easier to take an entire crew to Europe and keep them in hotels and keep the stars, especially the stars, keep them hotels, right? They could get the film done much quicker. Whereas in India, as you know what it's like, you know, the star will not turn up. Then you pay for everything. You pay for the crew, and the entire crew is waiting for one shift, two shifts, three shifts. There, everything could be done in, you know, 9 to 5. It could be done systematically, finished, brought here, and then the dubbing could take place in India. They actually, you know, preferred to shoot. A lot of filmmakers actually preferred commercial filming. So they would get stories, which that would, Pardes, take from Pardes, for instance, you know, a film like that. And it worked. And it worked for many reasons. One was that if you look, the interesting thing is that if you look at junior artists, that's another interesting point. The junior artists in the films today, in the commercial films today, are of a different category. You know, earlier they were from the city, they were, you know, just there were junior artist associations which from whom a filmmaker could get artists. But today, you know, you see, especially the background dancers, they're all a mixture, European and some Indians, some Europeans. The whole idea was to make the films more palatable and acceptable to an Indian middle class, which was much wealthier, which is much wealthier. A lot of junior artists, if they shoot in America or abroad, are Caucasian people. You must have noticed that.
Was there some sort of pleasure that a maker derives out of making a Caucasian dance for an Indian hero or something like that?
Yeah, that's possible, you know. You know, it indicates that the person has gone up in the social ladder, you know. But the truth, of course, is that a lot of the Caucasians are from the former Soviet republics, the ones who are shot in India.
True, very true. Yeah. And it's actually funny. I mean, as a member of audience, I would always think, oh, nice. So they have so many American white girls who are dancing behind them. But, you know, for all you know, they might be from Azerbaijan and Kazakhstan and Tajikistan and other places, right? So another point which I want to talk about here, sir, is this phenomena, especially after the 2000s, where you see popular cinema becoming very urban in its packaging. Like if you look at the Karan Johar films or Aditya Chopra films or basically makers of that slot, that type, you see that their packaging is very urban. It's very glossy, very aspirational, very fashionable, completely on point when it comes to high fashion. But the kind of values that these films sort of propagate are all typical traditional values. So yes, why has that happened? How do you look at it?
So it's a formula. The older formulas probably were not working. So the formulas had to change. And in order for the formulas to change, the makers had to tweak it a little bit. But at the same time, what happened is because this generation which is making films today are not rooted in the Hindi language. And so much of thinking and so much of culture and so much of history and society comes from, you know, the language. And if you look at the children of film stars who are now film stars, or the children of writers and directors who are now writers and directors, you'll find that their own lifestyle has changed, and they're not connected either to small town India or to rural India, certainly not at all connected to it. So all their ideas actually are coming from the West, from Hollywood. In the early times, there were not so many copies being made. You know, the source of the stories, the source of narratives is becoming very thin and is not rich anymore. Contrarily, there are some filmmakers who are small town filmmakers. I give the example of Kashyap and Bhardwaj. They come from small towns and they're not from these film families. So with them, they bring a kind of small town ambiance. So you will find right now so many small town romantic films or different other comedies, for instance, set in small towns, Allahabad, Lucknow, and so on and so forth, because there's a new generation after that, after the children of the film stars, the new generation that have come from small towns and actually breaking into the film industry.
This particular thing that you spoke about, the small town sensibilities which are coming in cinema. So yeah. You have such beautiful films these days, something like Stri or something like Bareilly Ki Barfi. Yeah. I'm not calling it beautiful from a whole experience point, but the small town sensibility is very nicely depicted in those films. So it's a welcome move that we are seeing again, right?
It's a good thing. And actually, the friction that you see, the friction that you see between within the Sushant Singh Rajput case, the friction that you see is a symptom of exactly that. That friction is taking place right now. I'm not sure it is to do with nepotism and so on, but it's a friction of intellectual and cultural heritage.
You know, we take a brief overview of post-independence cinema. It was predominantly rural, then it slowly started changing. Then there was a patch in between, say, 70s and 80s, when you had both parallel cinema and commercial cinema depicting different kinds of societies, to cinema catering to Indian diaspora, which was kind of Western in nature, in orientation, in background dancers, as we discussed, to now again, towards the end of two decades of this millennium, we are again seeing some small town sensibilities along with out and out glossy commercial cinema as well. And I'm sure that as time progresses, as we evolve, the much loved medium of cinema will keep on evolving as well in terms of depiction of places, in terms of settings of the movie. Ajit sir, thank you so much for being a part of this episode. We are actually going to have a couple of more episodes with Ajit Dwara discussing various issues concerning the evolution of Indian cinema. So we'll meet with him again after some time on the same platform. Till then, stay tuned.